Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, January 16th, 2015. And with me today, I have my surly partners in crime, Brian Chaffin. How are you?
I'm splendid. I'm splendiferous.
Splendiferous. That is a step above.
No, it's a step below.
Oh, well. There we go. I was holding the chart upside down. You're right.
Oh, that's funny stuff.
And that awesome laugh you heard mixed in with me and Brian is Kelly Gaumont. How are you, Kelly?
I was going to go with well, but now I feel like I need something else, you know, splendid or outstanding or something like that. Glorious. Okay. I'll go with glorious.
All right, here's the deal. This is like the second day in a row.
How about glorylicious?
It's extraordinarily or showily impressive. So you were right, and yet again when I corrected you, I was wrong. Twice, like three times in 2 days.
This is crazy.
Sorry about that.
Although you did not catch my grammatical error from just a moment ago, I said me and Brian instead of Brian and me.
I'm only mostly pedantic.
I know, mostly pedantic. Yeah. Hey, we have a sponsor this week, Lynda.com, and their awesome training programs, which
is splendiferous.
It is splendiferous.
It is.
And I'm gregariously excited to talk about them very, very soon.
Excellent.
But first, speaking of gregarious, I need to work on my bad segues so I can be on par with you, Brian.
It's a skill.
Yeah. Well, I'll work on it.
It's got to be honed.
Yeah, I guess so. All right. Anyhow, you wrote a piece yesterday about Google Glass and how Google is apparently shifting things around to what I perceive as a move to try and save Google Glass from imminent demise.
Yeah, well, the Google Glass team announced it in a blog post where they said that they were being graduated from the Google X Labs over to Nest. CNBC characterized it as a reorganization. And I think that a fair interpretation of this is that Google is looking to Tony Fadell, the father iPod, as I like to call him, to save Google Glass because, you know, it had all this hype when Google Glass was first announced. It had all this hype. As I pointed out in the piece, you know, it was held up as like, you know, this Google is out innovating Apple. Google is doing all these things better than Apple. Google is like really cool, blah, blah, blah. And then once Apple Watch rumors started being taken seriously, interest in Google Glass pretty much went away.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, how about that? And today, you know, no one's really talking about Google Glass, and it's because there are a lot of reasons, and it's not just because I know that Larry Page jumped on Robert Scoble and said that like Robert Scoble wearing his Google Glass in the shower is like the worst thing that ever happened to him.
I have tried for months to drink that image away.
Yeah, he's not wrong about that. Certainly not doing Google Glass any favors.
Yeah, but it also didn't hurt it. I mean, not really. Not really.
In the grand scheme of things, no. However,
you know who knows about Google Glass in the shower? It's the echo chamber.
Yeah.
And the rest of the world doesn't know, and the rest of the world doesn't really know about Google Glass or care either, except for the...
Or Robert Scoble, for that matter, for the most part. I mean...
That's true. Robert Scoble is a big deal in our world.
Right.
He's got a big audience, at least in our world, but it's not like the mainstream world knows knows much about him. But here's the thing. I respect Tony Fadell. The man has an intuitive grasp of how people want to interact with technology. Mm-hmm. And he's got an intuitive grasp, like Steve Jobs had an intuitive grasp. I'm not calling Tony Fadell a Steve Jobs, but he has that particular gift like Steve did. He's got this intuitive grasp of how people want to interact with technology. The iPod interface was genius. The Nest, genius. The Nest, whatever the smoke alarm is called,
Protect.
The Nest Protect. Thank you. It's a great product, man. He's doing really interesting things. But I don't think he can save Google Glass. And it's not because of any shortcomings on his part. It's because I think that Google Glass is essentially way ahead of its time. And it's certainly a solution for a geek want in a form factor that only a geek can tolerate. And apparently, as we're not seeing these things all over the place, not for very long.
Right.
Yeah, I did see more Google Glass at CES this year than I did last year. However, that I don't think that's very telling, because I was at a place where if you're going to see Google Glass, well, there you go.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Funny enough, The Verge, who picked up on this either right before or right after CNBC, whoever wrote that piece said that they hadn't seen any Google Glass anywhere at CES.
Huh.
So I guess it was where you were at Google Glass. But Jeff, do you mind if I take this down a Mason Truman rat hole?
Okay, since you qualified it as a Mason Truman rat hole, please.
So I've actually been thinking about this topic for a long time, since long before Google Glass was introduced. And this is a blatant plug for the science fiction novel that I'm in the process of trying to sell.
Mason Truman being the main character in your story.
Yeah, the main character, right. And it's science fiction. It's set in 2139 is when the story is set. And the folks in my future have all the capabilities of Google Glass plus a ton more. But it's done through access to one's optic nerve and the parts of the brain that control the optic nerve. And it includes an intermediary technology that can not only filter the information that you're seeing, but it controls that access for you in an intelligent way. And I'm talking about factotums, the virtual personal assistants in my future. And I think that sort of intermediary help in particular is absolutely essential for something like Google Glass to truly be useful. We need help filtering out the noise and controlling exactly what we see for something like Google Glass to be truly useful.
Well, if one of the things, like one of the things you always see that people have talked about, like in the future, is being able to see somebody, and like if you have them in your contacts, you have, you know, some information about that person, or if you don't, even, you know, there's certain information about someone who that's freely available that can be pulled up for you. So if that's the case, imagine walking in to the South Hall at CES. Like your Google Glass is going to have a meltdown, and if it doesn't, your brain will. Like I'm ADD, and that's too much information for me.
And you don't even want to like be able to have to hand toggle or hand, you know, flick with your eye. Each person you need something deciding and understanding what exactly it is that you want to see. Something that you can interact with without having to like jerk your eye around like you're in the middle of some sort of
epileptic seizure.
Yeah, yes. Thank you. That's precisely what I was trying to say. And we're so far away from that. We are so far away from any kind of technology that could truly handle that task, let alone the ability to – and like, you know, I guess we're probably not that far away from contacts that could serve the purpose that the glass part of Google Glass
mm-hmm.
No, I have seen articles about research that's being done into contacts that are, well, basically at computer interfaces. We're not that far away.
Yeah, 10, 20 years, maybe 30 years, those could become mainstream. But again, we open ourselves to this massive amount of information mm-hmm. being put in our eyeballs. We also need that intermediary help, and that's not something Tony Fadell. That's not a user interface issue.
Right.
That's a technology barrier that we are far from overcoming. And I don't Google Glass is just it's before its time. It's going to be it's going to be this niche product with very niche uses for the foreseeable future until it becomes irrelevant.
Because the technology will catch up and turn it into something else.
Sure. Yes. And I'm okay with Google having created Google Glass, even though there's a lot of people that are really flipping out. For me, it isn't so much about hey, everyone's putting on anti-privacy glasses. It was about pushing the boundaries and finding where the technology could be used and where the downfalls are and where the limitations are. And then later on, you figure out how to use all of that in a way that's more useful and more productive. But you have to start somewhere.
To be clear, and that's, I think, where Google was. Google, I think, was very aware that that disruption requires risk, and it requires people trying to do stuff. And that's something that Google is actually very good at, and I tip my hat to them. And the reality is that the technology that Google Glass promises is inevitable unless civilization ends. But until we don't need a pair of glasses to access it, it mm-hmm. will remain a nuisance and a problem for folks. Once right. it can be like it, be it a pair of contacts, be it
an ocular implant,
be it the thing that I've got in the far future where you've got a factotum actually controlling your optic nerve. Well, until then, it's going to be a nuisance. But once those things happen, boom, overnight, it's going to be everywhere. Mm-hmm. And people will actually stop worrying about it because they won't be seeing it. They won't see the glass hole walking down the street because everybody right. will be a glass hole, but no one will see it. So it's inevitable. It's just it's not here yet. That's all I'm saying.
So basically what it comes down to is you see the transfer over to Tony's hands as not – a surefire fix for Google Glass, but just the next step in wherever it's going, and Google Glass as we see it today is gone eventually.
Yeah, it's a Hail Mary pass, is what I think it is.
Yeah,
and it's going to be fumbled because it's a suicidal task for. I mean, yeah. it's not going to end Tony Fadell's career.
Right. The problems Google Glass has are not problems for Tony Fadell to solve.
Correct.
He can make it leaner and meaner, and he can make it a better interactive experience for people who have them, but it's not going to change what Google Glass is right now, which is this kind of weird thing that some people have that makes other people angry.
Yes.
There you go. All right. Hey, we have a sponsor today. Have I mentioned that?
You have. Lynda.com.
Yes. And that's
they put the smarty in your pants.
They should pay you royalties for that line. Yeah, so that's LYNDA.com. And if you're not familiar with Lynda.com, what that really means is that you haven't been paying close attention to the episodes all this week where I've been talking about them. What they do is they put together really great video training on an amazingly wide range of topics. So you can learn how to run your business. You can learn how to be more creative. You can learn how to make your taxes work. You can learn all kinds of amazing things. And each of these videos video training series that they produce are done in manageable pieces so you can learn the parts you need in the order that you want. And you're learning all of this from really smart people, like the people that actually know how to make this stuff work. So like industry experts, that's who's teaching. Some of the classes they have, you can learn Swift programming. You can learn how to more effectively use your iPhone or your iPad or your Mac. You can learn troubleshooting for your technology needs. You can learn Photoshop, photography, video editing, audio editing. It's great. So they have all these awesome things, and we all need to be smarter people. As Kelly says, we need to put some more smarty in our pants. So let's start loading up our pants. And what? But head over to lynda.com, lynda.com/TDO. And when you go to that link, you can get 10 free days of lynda.com training, as much training as you can possibly fit into your head.
Sweet.
So, yeah, so head on over to lynda.com/TDO, sign up, get your training, and thank you to Lynda for being our sponsor this week.
Indeed.
And the best bit is whoever you are, they have something for you. If you're super technical in Photoshop, but maybe not so much in another design application, they've got something for you. And if you want to learn about something that you know some about, like, they have things for all different levels of folks. So there's always something there for you.
Which is a big bucket of awesome.
It is.
Okay, so we have another topic today. And Kelly, this topic comes down to you and the fact that you really think about stuff.
The things I think about a lot. So overthinking Kelly strikes again here. I have been, and there's a long and public history of my battle with the home automation in my house. Let's start there. And there's an almost as long public record of me wishing that the Apple TV that I already have could be the hub for my home automation, because the hubs that are out now suck rocks, to put it mildly. The customer experience on most of the hub technology that's out there to let people really do home automation beyond a Wemo or a Philips light bulb is sucky. It's really no fun. If anything needed home automation, you know, if anything ever needed the magic touch of Tony Fadell, it was home automation. And so for him to do Nest was just absolutely the smartest thing. Anyway, so when HomeKit was announced at WWDC and we had Air Force One on stage talking about how you could say, someday you could say, Siri, turn the lights off. Siri, it's time for bed. And a number of things would happen because Siri would pass off that command and turn down the thermostat and make sure the lights were off, all that kind of stuff. It was amazing. It was the best thing I saw at WWDC last summer. It was hands down the thing I was waiting for the most. I was the most excited about. Can't wait, can't wait, can't wait, because the stupid thing in the hall in the utility closet now is a nightmare, and I hate having to deal with it. And anytime I have to go in there, it's just... And so,
and yet you're still having to wait.
Yes, and I still have to wait, but I may not have to wait as long.
Do tell.
So I was looking for there'd been some rumblings on the HomeKit front lately, and then there was a post on Reddit from somebody who said, is there a list of stuff that's HomeKit compatible? And somebody else said, no, I haven't seen one. So I started to build it. And then I realized we'd had, like, yay, HomeKit, we think it's great, from a bunch of people, but hadn't heard anything since. Kind of like Apple hadn't said anything since. So I went and asked them. And I asked Belkin about the Wemo, and they gave me the impression that something was going to be happening very soon, that it was on the horizon. I think what they told me was the very near future. And when a PR person tells you the very near future, that means I have a date, but I can't tell you it. And then I talked to Philips, and the official response I got from Philips was Apple's HomeKit launch was what they were referring to. And so that got me thinking, and then thinking more, and then thinking more. And it sounds like a foregone conclusion from Philips, which means that Wemo was saying the same thing to me without saying the same thing. So I got to thinking about it. And it seems to me to make perfect sense. We're coming up on, in March, it'll be 3 years since Apple TV's had an update. And a launch would be, whether it's a special event or whatever, you know, they end up deciding to do. Having a HomeKit launch means they will come out, and usually when there's a launch of some sort of technology, you have partners that are in on it with you. And it makes sense that the two most common, since they're the two that you can buy at the Apple store, I think you can buy Wemos at the Apple store. I know you can buy them at Home Depot, so they're super commonly available. And Philips Hue bulbs are available in the Apple store. So it makes sense that the two companies that you are the friendliest with that do home automation products would be two of the companies that you would have as part of your launch, which explains why they haven't had anything out yet that is officially HomeKitty, and why it's something that could be coming. So I put all of this together in my head because, as you know, I run a home for a good crackpot theory, and this seemed about as crackpot as any of them, except I was basing it in reality. So I'm super excited about this possibly being a thing, because I really want it to happen. I don't care if it's Apple issues a press release and says, hey, new Apple TV, here you go, or whether Tim Cook comes out on stage and starts showing it off or whatever. I don't care. I just need for this to happen so badly. There just aren't words. And so I'm more than happy to leap to that conclusion.
So it sounds like, from what you've been hearing, is that an announcement is coming soon. We don't
from
know
Apple.
From Apple. We don't know if it will be a big event or if it will just be a, hey, everything's ready, run with it.
Right.
Yeah, my guess though is that it will be an event. We don't have any evidence specifically to this case to this point, but I do believe that it's going to be an event. I think this is the sort of thing. The fact that Apple hasn't even issued a press release dealing with HomeKit says to me that Apple is wanting to make a pretty big splash about it when it does.
Right. And they don't have to worry about that with the Apple Watch. We already had a, guess what? Developers can make watch apps now. You still can't buy one, but we're going to put out a press release anyway. And they're going to do that for the Apple Watch, which isn't even shipping. I've had HomeKit as part of my phone since September.
And yet you wouldn't know.
Right. And the word launch indicates to me more than a press release. So I think we're going to get something. And I've already laid out the case for why it should be a new Apple TV. I've already laid out the case for why the Apple TV is perfect for this. I'm really hoping that that those pieces all line up, because in my mind, they match up pretty well. I don't feel like I'm making any huge leap to the conclusion that I'm coming to. So to me, this is a very exciting thing. Just because it's a possibility that it could happen, that's the thing that makes me the most excited. Because we all know Apple really knows customer experience. And if anything is the opposite of a good customer experience, it's trying to manage home automation right now. So I would really like for these two great tastes that taste great together to make things in my life better than they are now. Because I have a huge folder on my phone of all the apps I have to use to do the different stuff at my house. I'd like to be able to juggle that around a little bit.
Well, if the word that you're getting from manufacturers is right, there is a light at the end of your tunnel.
I sure hope so. And this time, maybe it won't be a train.
That would be awesome. Hey, we are out of time. So, I know. So we have to wrap up. Kelly, thank you so much for joining me today.
Of course.
And Brian, thank you for being here as well.
Indeed. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And thank you to lynda.com for being our sponsor this whole week. And go get your free 10-day trial, lynda.com/TDO. And thank you to all of our listeners for being here for yet another week. And we'll see you again on Monday.